Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guest is Hunter, a Portland attorney whose wife, Teresa, was found dead in their home in October 2023. Weeks later, he learned that their 27-year-old son, Austin, was responsible for her death. In 2018, Austin suffered a traumatic brain injury and experienced continued mental decline. He resisted treatment, which is common for people experiencing mental health challenges. He is currently detained in the Oregon State Hospital, where he is receiving court-ordered mental health treatment. Welcome, Hunter.
Good to be here.
First of all, very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
So, Hunter, let's start by talking about your 27-year-old son, Austin. Who is Austin?
Austin is 28 years old now, and he is the oldest of two sons. My wife and I tried to give our sons the childhood we would like, starting with learning foreign language. So Austin and his brother went to the Portland French School, and my wife was able to arrange a sabbatical for a year in Paris. So Austin spent third grade in Paris in the public school and learned French without an accent. We continued with the Portland French School for a year after returning, just because it was less of a transition, and then he went to Portland Public Schools. He was a good student, graduated from high school with honors, and was accepted to the Oregon State Honors Program and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in biomedical engineering with a scholarship. He chose Cal Poly, and it was a lovely university. I think I was as jealous as anybody. Austin had some setbacks starting first year at Cal Poly. I needed knee surgery and got mono and started struggling a little bit with things that we thought were overcomable. But after the first year, he asked, and we agreed that it would be a good idea for him to take the next year to kind of regroup at home. So he spent what would have been his sophomore year in college back at home, where we'd try to regroup and figure out the future. During that time, he did go back and got an associate's degree in science, but didn't continue on in biomedical engineering, and continued to have difficulty finding his footing. That's not uncommon for people at that age, so we just thought it was normal growing pains, and so continued to try to help him along. I think, like a lot of people of his generation, he enjoyed video games, but he also enjoyed exercise and swam and played basketball in high school. He liked to be outdoors. He liked music and experimented with a few different instruments, and I think he enjoyed the guitar the most. He was and is bright and full of promise. He just struggled more and more with his mental health. And some days were great and we were a fun-loving family that surfed together, and other days were more challenging.
So in 2018, Austin experienced a traumatic brain injury. Talk about that.
We were starting to build a house on the Southern Oregon coast, and he was helping with initially the construction, but we were doing some landscape maintenance, and there was an embankment on the property. He was pulling weeds, and he slipped and fell down the embankment. And concussions are odd because there are no outward symptoms, and he seemed fine after that, but symptoms come on later.
And what symptoms did you and your family start witnessing?
Well, initially, we thought it could just be a change in perspective or a disagreement on perspective on what he was going to do with his life and career. My wife and I both came up in an earlier time when expectations were different and there was not as much flexibility. And he really cherished the flexibility, and that led to some friction. But we tried to be supportive as much as we could with the path he chose. And he worked at Starbucks for a while and a car dealership, and was just seeming to try to find his traction, and we were trying to support that.
So when did behaviors begin to escalate or take a turn to where you and your wife became concerned?
The concussion was an issue starting shortly after the injury in 2018, but he was very involved in his own treatment and was very compliant with exercises and things that were supposed to help him heal from that. And so it wasn't until quite a while after that that he started secluding more in his room, and he moved out briefly and delivered for DoorDash and had three other roommates, and that didn't work out. We never heard the story of why that didn't work out, but he didn't seem to be able to function in a roommate situation, so he moved home.
So when did you and your wife, your family, feel that things were getting out of control?
Probably the fall of 2022 is where he really was secluding in his room, not eating very well, not taking care of basic hygiene very well. And it became an issue just living in our home with rotting food and cleanliness. And so we started to worry about him at that point. And finally, we talked to him and said, if you can't clean up your room, we understand, because he didn't seem to be really functioning very well, but we can't have it that way in the house. So we went to the extreme measure of posting a note on his door that says, we need to clean your room tomorrow. This is to give you the notice. He had some perception that he had a property right and that we couldn't enter his room in our house, even for things like cleaning. So we tried to do it as diplomatically as possible. And that night he left.
And then what happened?
He was gone for 3 months without a word. We didn't know where he was or how he was doing, and he didn't contact us. And then 3 months later, I got a call in the middle of the night from the Holiday Inn in Salem asking if I'd pick him up. And with that, he seemed delighted to be home. He was very thin and had poor hygiene. Didn't seem to be like he'd been eating well or taking care of himself. I think he was homeless part of the time and also had a credit card, I think, that he used for some needs and to stay in hotels part of the time. I mean, all of this I've found out since with records and receipts and things. And he was delighted to be home. And we talked about what we needed, which was cleanliness and communication and kindness to all work together. And he committed to that.
Did he follow through?
He started secluding again, and the same issue with the cleanliness in his room, and it was really difficult for four of us living at home.
So when did you seek mental health treatment or realize that there was something seriously wrong here and he needed help beyond the help he was getting earlier for the traumatic brain injury?
During all of this, starting probably the summer of 2022, my wife found a counselor who specialized in families with children who needed help. And so we did ideally weekly counseling with this counselor to try to get us so we were working together to help him. And things continued to decline. Often it was because he refused to keep the appointments that we had with the counselor, to the point where we called the Portland Project Respond when he was secluded in his room and we couldn't get him at that point. His hygiene was poor, was eating poorly, and we learned of that resource to try to talk to him to get him to either see a psychiatrist or go to a clinic, because he refused to on his own.
And did he follow through?
As I said, he was and is bright and articulate. And so he was able to rally when they came and hold a very coherent conversation. And he was not a danger to himself or others in their evaluation. So there was nothing they could do or we could do against his refusal to seek help.
So your wife, Teresa, sought guardianship then. Talk about why and the results of that.
Things deteriorated to the point that we knew there was a problem and we didn't feel safe with him driving. So we parked his car at my parents' garage and did not give him access to his car and continued to talk about trying to get help. And we used the car as a carrot and said, if you will go get help and a psychiatrist will write that it is okay for you to drive, then we will make that happen. We will give you your car and we'll provide insurance. And we were insured with Kaiser, and they have a voluntary but locked inpatient mental health center by Sunnyside called Brookside. And so he agreed to voluntarily go to Brookside. I'm not sure what happened there, but after he checked in through the emergency room, that was the first full psychotic break. He thought that within a couple hours that they were trying to poison him and they were pumping gas through the ventilation system and poisoning the water system and abusing patients. He was just void of reality when he checked in, and he had never exhibited anything nearly that extreme. He was so bad that it was beyond the level of care of Brookside, and so they said that they were going to have to transfer him back to the emergency department because they couldn't treat that severe of mental illness. And when they came to transfer him back, I think there were between 4 and 6 people with a wheelchair. He panicked and grabbed it was a locked unit, so he needed a badge to get out, grabbed a badge from one of the nurses and ran down a stairway on the back of the building and swiped out of the door, down the side of the property across Sunny Brook Road, I think, and over a fence into a creek area that's covered with blackberries. And Kaiser security followed, but it was very thick blackberries, and there was no way to follow him. During that, he lost his shoes, so he was in the blackberries with short sleeve shirt and no shoes. We got a call when we thought he was being transferred back that he had escaped. So we went looking for him, filed a police report, asked them help. It happened in the middle of the afternoon, and we looked all over, but it's a big wild area next to Sunnybrook Road. Thick vegetation and a big area, so had no luck finding him. So we gave up for the night, and I went home. In the middle of the night, I got a call from the Clackamas County Sheriff's Department that they found him at a gas station close by, and would I pick him up? He gave them my phone number. He sought out the police, I think, because of his good experience with Project Respond and the Portland Police Behavioral Health Unit. So he trusted the police, and I picked him up in the middle of the night. He was extremely psychotic, and he was scraped from head to toe from the blackberries, and he could barely walk because he had thorns in his feet.
So you took him home with you at that point?
Yes. That is when we discovered, because it was so hard to get him to go to Brookside, and we knew after that experience there was no way he would go back voluntarily, and we knew that after numerous conversations with the Project Respond and the Portland Police Behavioral Health Unit, who, as an aside, were spectacular throughout this, that the threshold to get him involuntarily was that he needed to be an immediate danger to himself or others, or have a grave disability where he was taking so poor care of himself that his health was in severe jeopardy. So at that point, we thought we needed to nurse him back to good enough physical health to be able to work on mental health, and started bringing him meals and trying to get him physically healthy. And also my wife applied for guardianship. She was a physician, so was in a much better position to help him with mental health than me. And that's kind of a difficult and expensive process, but was supposed to be our way around the necessity that he was imminent danger to himself or others. After that, he was declining even worse, secluding more in his room, poor ADLs, activities of daily living, brushing teeth, showering, and losing weight to the point where the Portland Police Behavioral Health Unit was able to clearly see that he met the criteria for grave disability, where the only place was that to go was severe health or death.
And so what type of care did you seek under the guardianship?
Commitment to an inpatient psychiatric hospital, which guardianship was supposed to allow, but it doesn't get them there. And he's a big, strong 27-year-old, so you don't just wrestle him into the car. And that's finally when the Portland Police Behavioral Health Unit were able to make the judgment of grave disability. We ordered an ambulance and took him involuntarily to the hospital. He was admitted inpatient psychiatric ward, locked involuntary because of the guardian hold at the hospital. During that time, he continually refused medication, even though they asked him to take medication. And they said that he was too well to treat involuntarily, even with a guardianship hold, which we didn't understand because guardianship is supposed to allow the guardian to make medical decisions. And Teresa pushed them significantly on this. She's talking doctor to doctor in doctor language and saying this needs to happen. And they said it can't. So their solution was Austin needs to realize that he needs medication. And there is some validity in that because at some point all medication is voluntary because you're outside of the hospital and you need to take it yourself. They wouldn't treat him to the point that he might realize that by starting him on medication. Their solution was a behavioral health plan that had a few different elements that was designed to fail. It was designed for Austin to realize that he couldn't really take care of himself and to have him on board and to have him agree that if he is discharged with this behavioral health agreement and is unable to perform it, then he'll understand that he needs treatment. And the behavioral health plan had different sections. One was safety, talking to people if you're feeling there's anything to be concerned about, and appropriate ways to handle anger and, you know, other things to make people safe around you. And then there was a treatment plan where he would agree to see a psychiatrist weekly at first and then biweekly after getting established. And there was a living plan, vocational, go back to school, get a job. And again, it was designed to fail because I don't think anybody expected Austin to be able to do that. The theory was that by agreeing to it and not being able to perform on it, he would realize that he needed medication. We thought that he wouldn't be able to hold a job and he would fail the vocational part of the behavioral health plan. Well, he failed the safety part by killing his mother. I should go back to the hospital admittance too, because the discharge diagnosis was unspecified psychosis. So they knew he was psychotic. And yet, I don't know how you say someone who's psychotic is not a danger to themselves or others. But that was also the conclusion.
So during this time, did you ever witness any signs of violence by your son?
One time when he was psychotic, the only time we were concerned about physical harm, he thought someone from Brookside Hospital was back at our house to get him in the middle of the night and picked up a knife and went to see who it was. He did get angry a few times and break some household items, which was out of character for him and unacceptable to my wife and I. And we let him know that. And those were basically the only occasions.
So you kept him at home with you. Was he receiving any mental health care at that time?
The only thing was the family counselor who specialized in parents and children, he did do a few of those appointments. And we often would do an appointment without him trying to figure out what we could do to help him when he wouldn't join. That was all that he would do, and even that reluctantly.
Let's talk about Teresa, your wife. How did you learn about her death in October of 2023?
We're still building that house on the Southern Oregon coast that I mentioned where Austin fell and got a concussion, and I'm acting as a general contractor on that. We were generally concerned about safety, and our younger son is living at home, and we made sure that at least somebody was home at all times when my wife Teresa was there. At that point, I was gone at the coast, and I got a call at 6 a.m. in the morning from our younger son, and he said, "Mom's gone." I didn't know what that meant, so he clarified that she died. I told him I'd be there as soon as I can. It's about 5 hours away. So I drove home, and the medical examiner had told my younger son and Teresa's sister, who lives nearby, that they didn't see any evidence of foul play or trauma. And Austin was there as well. And so we huddled as a family and tried to figure out how a person like my wife in such spectacular health could just die.
And what was Austin's reaction?
He seemed traumatized, but we all were. And he was struggling with mental health before that, so it was hard to distinguish what he was feeling.
So there was an autopsy?
Yes. As I said, the initial impression from the medical examiner said that there was no evidence of any trauma or foul play. And so we thought that she just died of a heart attack or something. And that was the last word that we got. They did an autopsy the same day. And a couple days later, I got a call from a homicide detective with the Portland Police Department. I thought they were just being thorough because I had questioned the medical examiner because Teresa was so healthy that how can this just happen? So my impression, still thinking that there was no evidence of trauma, was it that they were just being thorough. 4 or 5 days after she died, Portland police homicide detectives came to the house to take pictures and interview me, Austin, and our younger son. And I still thought that there was no evidence. What we learned later is the autopsy revealed that Teresa was strangled, but we did not know that during the time that we were talking to the detectives.
What was your reaction to that news?
I didn't find out that news until a few weeks later when Austin got psychotic again and thought he had been poisoned and asked to go to the emergency room. And so I took him back to the emergency room of the hospital where he was an inpatient in the psychiatry because I knew they knew the history on that, hoping to get him back in and getting more psychiatric care because he obviously was worse. I thought it was just from grief and trauma. Back at the hospital, he had another complete psychotic break, similar to the one that he experienced at Brookside, and was convinced that they were trying to poison him and that they were pumping gas through the ventilation system. So I was with him in the middle of the night in the emergency room waiting to be admitted to the psychiatric unit the next day. I guess I was kind of dozing off, and he took my phone that I had out, and he called 911 and admitted to killing Teresa. And I thought he called the police because he trusted them, and he knew if he did that, they would come get him out of the emergency room where he thought they were trying to kill him. Not surprisingly, the police came, and he was feeling better from what he thought was the poisoning and said he was fine. And they asked to talk to me separately. And while I was separated, they arrested him and took him downtown for questioning. And reportedly during that questioning, he admitted that he killed his mother by strangulation.
Hunter, what was your reaction to this news? I can't even imagine.
I was concerned from about 20 minutes into my drive home the morning Teresa died that Austin might have done it. But with the medical examiner's information that there was nothing concerning, I had let that override my concern. So I was devastated. It's like losing another family member.
So Austin is currently at the Oregon State Hospital. And what charges is he facing?
Murder. He was in very poor mental health in the jail, which wasn't a surprise. And you had the legal right to be able to aid and assist in your own defense. And if because of a mental illness, you are not able to aid and assist, then a judge can send you to the Oregon State Hospital for what they call restoration, back to mental health enough to be able to aid and assist in your own defense and work with your attorney. And so he stayed in the jail for almost a month before he was able to get transferred to the Oregon State Hospital in Salem for treatment.
Is he accepting treatment?
He is accepting your treatment. It's so tragic that took something so bad for him to realize that he needed help. But with all this happened, my understanding from the Oregon State Hospital is that he voluntarily took treatment, including medications.
Is he aware of what he's done?
I think so, and I have asked him about that, but he has not been able to talk about it. With treatment, the recovery was nothing short of miraculous, which was a double-edged sword, because had it come earlier, Teresa would be alive, and Austin wouldn't be living with his own guilt and with a murder charge.
Hunter, you have been talking about what you've learned about the mental health system. What else comes to mind that you've learned first time experiencing something like this?
What I've discovered is the system that we currently have is destined to fail, no matter what your resources. I mean, we are definitely privileged. My wife was a doctor, and I'm a lawyer. Our primary focus has always been family and taking care of our kids. So we would do anything we could to help them. But after probably almost a dozen visits from both the Portland Police Behavioral Health Unit and Project Respond, just trying to get our son help, hearing the horror stories from people trying to get civil commitment, seeing and hearing from the behavioral health unit how hard it is to get somebody obviously suffering to get treatment because the bar is so impossibly high of imminent threat to themselves or others that there are so many barriers to treatment, you're almost destined to fail. I was concerned about taping a show named Prison Pipeline in my situation, but what I've discovered is that the entry point for almost all mental health is through the criminal justice system, and thus Prison Pipeline seems appropriate.
And Hunter, talk about Teresa. She was, as you said, a doctor, very accomplished, only 59 years old.
I met Teresa when she was in medical school 36 years ago today. She was beautiful in every possible way, smart, caring, dedicated, and great to be around. We had a great life together and did a ton before children and then had a spectacular time raising two boys. I don't think any marriage is without some conflict, but we really loved each other and we're both dedicated to each other, our family, and especially our boys.
Hunter, this is such a difficult time for you and your family. We never know how many families will see themselves in this situation and who will be helped. So thank you.
Since my own tragedy, I have heard so many heartbreaking stories. I hope it helps.